Bononic. I'll explain in detail what that is later. But first, and I noticed a lot of Al-Anons here give their serenity date. We were sitting in the meeting last night, and my husband said, I've never heard Al-Anons give their serenity date. And I said, well, you know, no, me either. He goes, are you going to give one tomorrow? And I said, yeah, sure. Sometime in the late fall of 1982. I can tell you the date. I can tell you the time. I could probably tell you what he was wearing when he had his last drink, but I have no idea what my date is. Which makes me a real and true Al-Anon. Thank you very much. Anyway, I first want to start. She's had this planned at the beginning of the week that, crap, I better not cry. I wanted to thank Harlan for inviting me this year. I was supposed to come last year. And and I called him a couple of days before the convention, and a very, very, very close friend of mine had an accident. He was my trainer, my horse trainer. I didn't start riding horses till I was 60 years old, but it had been my dream my whole entire life. And Larry made my dream come true. He was just short of 74 years old, rode a horse like a 20-year-old cowboy that, like, you've never seen. He was incredible. He lives in Norco, and every person with a nutcase horse would bring it to Larry, and he was like the dog whisperer. I mean, he was amazing. And he was riding this horse, which I told him he should send back because it was a wild Mustang, out on the street by himself. Something happened. He hit his head. And I called Harlan, and I said, I know I'm supposed to come on Wednesday, but I just can't. I can't leave Larry. But I've never, ever canceled a speaking engagement ever, so the program saved my life. You know, Larry enhanced my life. You know, where do I go? What do I do? And I'm on the phone, poor Harlan, and I'm like, you know, I just, like, went back 40 years. I lost it all, and I don't know what to do, and I can't leave. And he's like, whoa, whoa, you know, take a breath. He said, we're here to serve each other. And if this is where you're supposed to be, you don't worry about it. He said, well, I'm going to take care of it. I'll find somebody else, no problem, but you promised me you'll come next year. And I said, deal done, buddy. So I sat bedside with Larry's wife and his sister every day for a week. I mean, at the end of the week, we lost Larry. And I was devastated. And at some point, I got in touch with Harlan, and I said, I just want to tell you, you know, what happened. And he said, I am so glad that you stayed home, and God wanted you there. And I mean, he just built me up so much. And it's the kind of stuff that I get from the program here. If I get lost in the middle of some nonsense in my life, we talk to each other, we reason things out, and we figure it out together. So I've been talking to him, you know, all year off and on. Sometimes he'd call for, yeah, thanks. He'd call, you know, about something, and we would just chat. But I had met him because I came here for spoke at It's a She Thing years ago, and everybody was really nice to me, but I didn't know anybody, but I still had a good time. And he had to run some errands one day, and he goes, come on, take a ride with me. And we rode all over Seaside and had to get everything he needed, and we talked and talked and talked and talked and talked. And I know there are people here that have known him for years and years, and he's deep in their heart, but he made me feel just like you guys. You would never know that I didn't know him for 20 years. That's just the way he was. And I was so looking, and he had me speak somewhere else. I can't remember, but I was excited to come and see him and hang with him again. And then I get the text on Thursday, and I'm devastated about the whole thing. But I just want all of you to know from my side what a special man he is for me. Another one of those program people that changed my life. Yeah, that's for Harlan. And Zan, I did meet you quickly at the She Thing, but you were busy and I hardly got a chance to talk to you, but I love your husband. I got to say, Ty's doing a good job, though. He's really funny. Yes, he is. Ty's doing a very good job. Anyway, okay. Let's go back to the part about why I call myself an Al-Anonic. I got to the program when I was in my 20s, and there was I ended up going to these Al-Anon meetings that was full of all these old ladies. They were like 40. I think there was one that was 50. And they would sit around and they would talk about, you know, I am a grateful member of the Worldwide Fellowship of the Al-Anon Family Group. And I was like, ugh. And then we go to an AA meeting and this guy gets up and he's like, you know, my name is Joe and I'm an alcoholic. And I said, I should drink more. I want to be like them. You know, I want to. As a matter of fact, I have a really good friend in AA, and I keep telling her, I don't know what you're doing in AA. She is always running around fixing everything, fluffing everybody up, you know, doing, working. I said, girlfriend, you are an Al-Anon that drank too much. And she says, really? Because you're an AA that doesn't drink enough. So we've decided that she's 51% AA, 49% Al-Anon. I'm 51% Al-Anon, 49% AA, and we just hang. That's the way we do it. But I actually don't believe that there's that much different about us. I had seen a speaker one time, and I've heard it before, but he was talking about how he wasn't smart enough, you know, he wasn't good-looking enough, and he wasn't enough, and he drank and he felt better. And I was like, wow, you know, I always felt like that too. You know, I have red hair, which I'm cool with now, but when I was a kid, not a good thing to have. You know, I was a little chubby. I was, you know, I just was not right. But if I could make everything else around me right, then my world would be fine. If I could drink and make my world fine, I probably would have done that too. But it didn't work for me. I mean, I drank. It doesn't bother me. You know, it doesn't work for me. But I can fix you. When I fix you, oh, you don't even know what it does to my heart. But so I came across the, you know, the AA checklist here, and I just want to read a couple of them to you. And if you take out the word drink and put in the word think, it is so totally us, you guys. We need one of these lists. Anyway, the first one is thinking, making your home life unhappy. Yeah. Is thinking affecting your reputation? As long as you keep your thoughts to yourself. Has your ambition decreased since thinking? And that was one of my good ones. We had these swivel rocker chairs in the living room, and Pat would be gone yet again, you know, not home from work, and I'd be swiveling and rocking in that chair, and oh, man, I'd hate him so bad, and why is he doing this again? And then, you know, in my mind, the doorbell would ring, and you know, and the police would be there, and, you know, he had a drunk driving accident, now he's dead, and, you know, oh, and I would be so happy. And I had his funeral planned in Chicago. Funerals are big. They're huge. Huge. And he's half Irish and half Italian. Like, nobody puts on a funeral like the Irish and the Dagos. You know, the Dagos cook, the Irish bring the beer, and it's all in. And so I you know, I picture myself standing at the casket of my perfectly dressed husband, because he doesn't like to be perfectly dressed, so I would, you better believe, perfectly dress him. And people would be coming up and saying, oh, I'm so sorry. And I'm like, yeah, me too. And then the union would come up and give me that big dead check. I don't know what you call it, but he's dead. Here's the money. And all the guys, he's a lineman by trade. And all the linemen, they put money in for everything. They make us look like we're cheap here. I mean, something happens, they're all like pulling out bills. And so they'd give me that money too. And I, you know, I'd be taken care of. And I wouldn't have to put up with their grief anymore. My life would be awesome. Like there was nothing wrong with me, right? Anyway, does thinking cause you to have difficulty in sleeping? Well, hell yeah. And here's my very favorite of all. Do you think alone? Well, of course I think alone. What do I care what you think? I mean, what? No. I don't need you in on what I'm thinking at all. And then this one bugs me. Have you ever been to a hospital or institution on account of your thinking? Well, let me tell you something. I didn't get to go to no rehab and make moccasins or wallets or whatever it is Dr. Bob talks about in the big book. As a matter of fact, I didn't get any moccasins or wallets when he got out of rehab. You know, he's got 30 days off. I'm getting phone calls from the bill collectors and, God help me, the relatives want to know, what is going on in your house? What's wrong with you guys? why can't you get yourselves together? And I'm like, oh, if I could get my hands on him, I'd kill him. But anyway, I'll tell you how that happened. I was in a bar one day with my friends. I was 20. And I saw this guy playing pool, and he was really good looking. And then as I started watching him play pool, actually the drunker he got, the better he played. So I started making side bets, and I'm winning money like crazy. And then as the night went on, I met him, and oh my God, he was so much fun. And I was like, put my hook in, and I start reeling, and I'm like, this is what I want. I'm this Irish Catholic girl, and raised by very strict parents. My dad was crazy, crazy strict, and now I'm at the total opposite of anything I've ever known, and I have got to explore this. So we started dating, and we just did the craziest things. Both big-time White Sox fans, and we didn't go to work one day and went to opening day, and we would just take day trips like crazy. And then one day when we were in Chicago, Pat goes, hey, you want to go visit these guys I was in the service with? And I said, yeah, sure, where are they? And he's like, Buffalo, New York. Yes, thank you. Oh, you know what? It just happened. Before I go any farther, I want to tell you guys that after my trainer had his accident, 4 months later, I did the exact same thing for the second time. So I've had a head injury twice within 2 years, and this one was really pretty bad. So I was a little nervous about speaking here today because sometimes my brain just, like, goes blank. And I don't want to look like an idiot. Oh, there was another thing. I was going to call Harlan and go, gee, Harlan, I don't know if I should come this year. And I spoke a couple of weeks ago, and it was only half an hour. And I was like, sweet, I can do a half an hour standing on my head, you know. And a couple times I lose words. So if I lose words, I've got a helper down here, and he yells them out to me. And here's the best part. I don't even remember what word I asked.
Buffalo.
Buffalo. Oh, yeah. Thank you. So now I got all of you to help me. So we go to Buffalo for a weekend. We drive from Chicago to Buffalo for a weekend. And we had so much fun. We partied it up, and we had a flat tire on the way out, and on the way home we had two. And so we made it to Indiana, but we couldn't get any further because it was the middle of the night, and we had no more spares left. There's nothing open to get a spare, so we went to a tavern. And while we were in there, Pat called his grandfather, and he was a Cook County sheriff. Used to be a bootlegger for Capone, now he's a Cook County sheriff. That's another program. Anyway, this is what I married into, this family. So anyway, he calls his grandfather up and says, we're stuck at this bar in Indiana, and I got a flat. Can you come and get me? And he was so mad. He put his sheriff's jacket on over his pajamas, got in his squad, and drove out to the bar and left his Mars lights on in the parking lot, opens the door, and is like, you two, here! And the whole bar was like, holy shit, like, holy crap, what's going on here? And me and Pear are like, okay, you know, so we go out, and then I was thinking to myself, oh my God, this guy is so much fun too! He comes from a long line of fun, this is just going to be the best. Yeah, what an idiot. But anyway, so we dated for a while, and then one day Pat said to me, hey, you want to move in together? And I said, have you met my mother? I mean, Irish Catholic, I had a friend that moved in with her boyfriend, and my mother never saw her, never talked to her. She did not exist anymore because she was nothing but, you know, a sinning pig. And I was like, you know, I think she'll probably treat me the same. And he goes, yeah, okay, you're right. So a couple minutes later, he goes, well, I don't know, you want to get married? And I said, yeah, okay, let's do that. You know, Dr. Laura talks about, you know, make out your list, see what's important to all of you, do a little pre-marriage counseling, none of that stuff. We were like, oh, where do you want to have the reception? It'll be so much fun. And oh, my God, it was. We got married, and the reception was fun, and we went back to my mom's house, and we were opening all the cards, and there were little gifts in the cards from some of our friends, you know, like a hunk of hash or a pot. My mom's like, I can't see that. And I'm like, hold on, Mom. And we're trying to slip it out of the envelope while she's not looking. It's like, oh. One of the cards we got came, happy wedding, Pat and Ellen. You owe me X amount of dollars. I'm going to give you X, so now you only owe me whatever. And I'm like, yeah, nice card. Nothing's telling me back up, sister, what have you just done to yourself? But anyway, we took that along with our hash and our pot and everything else we got and started our married life. And so, as things went on, I was kind of slowing down a little bit. I mean, I wasn't totally home, but the really partying, running away type of thing was over. And within the first year, I got pregnant with our first kid, and I was very excited. And we went to the hospital, and we had a baby boy, our baby boy. Pat's a big-time Notre Dame fan, and this was going to be the future quarterback of Notre Dame. And we were so excited. And that little shit took 24 hours to come out, so he better do something good. And anyway, so I was in the hospital for a few days, because that's what they did back then, and I'm waiting on the day to go home, and I'm in my bed, and they bring in the baby. They said, you gotta go. And I was like, but I'm waiting for my ride. And he never showed up. So my mom came and got us, and my son went home with a T-shirt that said Property of Christ Hospital and a blanket they wrapped him in. And, you know, none of this, you know, buy the whole outfit, all that. Matter of fact, I wore the clothes I came into the hospital, and that's the way we went home. And I got to the house, and Pat's standing on the porch, and he's looking at us coming up the driveway like, I was supposed to do something today, I think, but I can't remember what it was. And I got in the house, and I'm like, dude, what happened? How could you not come to pick your son up from the hospital? And he goes, oh, I am so, so sorry. He said, but I was so excited about my new son that I overserved myself last night, and I overslept, and I am so sorry. Okay, wait for it. And he said to me, and I promise I'll never do it again. And I was like, of course you do. Over and over and over. Anyway, so our life started getting a little more picket fencey, you know, let's kind of back out of the bar. We both played softball for the tavern, and you know, I'm up for going up there for a couple of beers and you go home. I mean, we used to even take the kids up there and they'd get chips, all our friends' kids would go, and it was a fun time. But Pat just didn't want to go home. And so I remember one night we went up after a baseball game. Here's the crazy things that's wrong with us. This is why I'm an Al-Anonic, because I have to fix it all. So we're at the bar, and drinking beer could be kind of bad, but if Pat's drinking liquor, it's bad for the whole world. So he's sitting at the bar talking to somebody, and I'm sitting next to him, and he orders a shot of Yukon Jack. And I was like, oh, here we go, this is gonna be bad. And so he turned around to talk to his buddy, so I picked up the shot and I drank it and put it back, thinking he's gonna look at this and go, oh, I must have forgot I drank it. Oh, I'm good to go. And he goes, hey, give me another one. I don't even remember drinking that one. So we did it like 6 times in a row. And I eventually went to the bathroom. It was just like a one toilet room. And went to the bathroom, and as I was sitting there, I fell asleep. And for quite some time. I had a sink and spale of my own. And then when we left, he got to see what my life was like for a while. But anyway, things like that kept going on. And Pat works outside, and if it rains, like, oh my God, if he lived up here, it would rain all the time. He didn't come home. They'd go to the bar. And sometimes he'd come home later that night. Sometimes he didn't come home for a couple of days. I never knew. What's that one chapter in the big way? You know, taking a trip, not taking a trip. I think he wrote the whole thing, because he did them all. He, you know, changing from liquor to beer or whatever it is, and special wine or whatever the whole thing is. He did them all. But he started traveling. We were in Chicago. We heard there was a lot of work in California in a bar one night. So him and this guy got in the car and decided they were going to go to California. Neither one of them told their wives. He ended up waking up in Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, and decided to come back home. And I was done. I was done then. I said, that's enough. You know, I'm going home. I'm taking the 2 kids I have. And, he called me again, and he didn't even know that he was on the way there till he was in Oklahoma. He was in some other state. That's when he was in, and then he's trying to tell me about a blackout. And I'm like, oh yeah, here we go. Here's a new one, a blackout. How do you forget your 3 states over, buddy? What do you think, I'm stupid? No, I'm out of here. And so we decided that we were going to go to counseling, and so we did. And so we go to counseling, and it was a $5 copay, and I think we overpaid. And so we get in there, and I bring my Al-Anon head. My brain has files in it. It is under dates. It is under things he did wrong. It is under all the great things I did right. I can pick out whatever you want. You just ask me, and I'll tell you. So we get in there, and the counselor looks at Pat and says, Pat, what do you think is wrong? What's going on here? And he goes, I come home from work sometimes, and there isn't any dinner on the table. And I come home from work, and the house is a mess, and the kids are crazy, and I just don't know what to do. And I'm like, what? So she turns to me, and she says, Ellen, do you think you can make a better effort to cook dinner every night? And see, Pat, they're all on my side. And will you clean the house and keep the kids under control? And, you know, he's worked hard all day long. And I was like, I got to get out of here. I don't know. Somehow or other, the thing ended, and we were in the car on the way home. And I'm like, what just happened in there? Are you out of your mind? What are you telling her about dinner? Who cares about dinner? You're gone for 3 days. And I just was, and I said, this is it. I am done. I am going home, and I'm going to put up every white picket fence in that yard, and I'm keeping you in it, and we're going to get our shit together, or we're done. And I was driving. And so he was like, oh, okay, I'll do whatever you want. Just get me home. So we get home, and this is my favorite. This is my very favorite. Every time Pat would do something bad, like a lot of times I could see it coming, he would just kind of like act different, carry himself different. His attitude was different. I'd be going, oh, kid, something bad's coming. You better put a lid on things, like watch it, you know, like just smoke pot, no drinking, or, you know, no coke, or, you know, pull it in a little bit. And he's like, nag, nag, nag. That's all you do is nag. No wonder I drink. You're such a nag. And then he'd be like, okay, here we go. I mean, this is the way it would go. And then he would do something horrid, and then we would have a big fight, and then he'd come home, and then he'd have the pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. The first time I heard that at a meeting, I'm like, I knew that long before you guys did. I didn't call it that, but I knew that. And it was my favorite, because I had a piece of paper with everything I wanted done in the house, everywhere I wanted to go, what I wanted you to buy, and I just slapped that sucker in the fridge, and it was like, boom, done. That's the only time I ever got him to do anything. And since he got sober, I ain't got nothing anymore. Getting him to do anything is like, ugh. Like, have a drink and build me something. But that just reminds me. Our kitchen in our last house, we needed a new kitchen so bad. And there was this one drawer that didn't have any more of the slides to sit on, so, you know, it'd go down like that. So Pat took all this Tupperware, and he piled it all up to hold the drawer up. And I needed a Tupperware one day. And I'm under there taking it down, and he goes, what are you doing? I've got that drawer, you know, shimmied up with that. Now, how do you think that's okay? So he can't fix the drawer. He has to buy a new kitchen, which worked for me. Anyway. So we go down the line, and, you know, things are off and on all the time, and I'm just, we actually knew some people that had known about Al-Anon, and I'm like, Al-Anon, this guy's an idiot. He's not like that, in between. But I'm not going to Al-Anon, so I didn't think of anything like that at all. And one day he was at work and got rained out, and they all went to the tavern, and he got drunk and ended up going to Las Vegas. He calls me from Las Vegas, and he says, it's me. I just called to tell you that I'm in Vegas, and it's over. And I was like, what? And he goes, it's over. I'm done with you. I'm out of there. I'm going. And I'm like, what? What are you telling me? This is like having a job you hate your whole life, and you get fired before you get to quit. I'm like, no, You're not dumping me, fella. I'm going to the lawyer tomorrow, and I'm taking you for everything you got, sucker. And so that's what I did. I go to the lawyer, and he's got, you know, the big legal sheet of paper, and he's got his pen. He's like, all right, I'm ready. I said, I want a divorce. And where we lived, you could get a divorce in 30 days. Start to finish, boom, done, 30 days. I said, I want it done in 30 days, and I want everything we own. And he goes, well, what do you got? And I said, well, we have a house. And he's like, that's good. And I said, it's 4 months behind in the mortgage. He goes, that's bad. Cars? Yeah, but we own both of them. Okay. You got this, you got that. And so basically he had nothing on his yellow piece of paper except divorce in 30 days. So anyway, he comes back from Vegas and he said, you know what, I'm done. I'm moving to California. I've got the wrong wife, the wrong kids, the wrong job. I even have the wrong dog. I'm out of here. I'm gone. I'm coming to get my clothes. And I said, oh, well, I threw them all out. They were gone. I took everything and threw it all out. But anyway, he took off and moved to California, and this is where my disease went on crack. I was on crack. Al-Anons can do crack. Anyway, don't woe me. We don't have a problem. Anyway, I was angry all the time. I was just angry. And, you know, the kids would get up in the morning, like, Mom, can we have breakfast? I just fed you last night. You're hungry again? What the heck? You know, and I'd put their clothes on, I'd put them outside, and I'd said earlier, the bill collectors are calling, and what lie did I tell them last time, and what could I tell them this time? I didn't have any money. We were so far behind in everything, and I had this little part-time job that I didn't make much at all, And then the families are calling, past families calling. They're like, you know, I told you Pat had a drinking problem. I'm like, yeah, thanks a lot for that. Yeah, bye, get out. You know, what's going on with you guys? And how did things get like this? And I don't know. It's just horrible. So all day long, I'm just white knuckling all day, getting through, going to work in the days I had to, taking care of my kids, doing all this stuff. And at night, I would go in bed, and it was like, I had everything up in the air all day long, and then it just started falling on me. And I was scared to death, and I was lonesome, and I was hurt, and I was mad. Oh, man, I was mad. And all these feelings would just descend on me, and I had no idea what I was going to do at all. So sometime went by, and I realized I was pregnant. Now, this is my bottom. I mean, I think we all have a bottom that shows us what the heck, who we really are. And so now I've got two kids. I got a part-time job. I can't, you know, I got to go get a full-time job. I can't get a full-time job pregnant. I never made the kind of money that could pay daycare hardly for two kids, more or less than three. And who's going to, you know, in Illinois, they don't have, I don't know if they have it here, but in California, the state pays you when you're off for maternity leave. They didn't have anything like that there. Who's going to take care of this baby? I got to move forward, and this kid ain't coming with. Still hurts me to this day that I even felt like that, that I was going to take the life of somebody else because I couldn't get my shit together. Somehow my mother found out that was my idea, and she said, Al, we're going to fix this thing. You know what? Whatever you want, you come live with me. We're going to take care of this. And, you know, Pat is what Pat is. And we're done. And that's when I decided that I just have to get myself together. I got to get out of this hole I'm in, this anger, this hurt, this frustration, this shame, 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 shame. I was just dying of shame. And so shortly after that, Pat had found his way to rehab out in Palm Springs. And they started calling me. These sweet little counselors, you know how they talk. They talk all sweet and, you know, they want to get you to share. And she would call me up and she'd say, hi, Ellen, this is, you know, Susie Q from Pat's Vacation. And I'm just wondering how you're doing. And I'm like, what do you mean, how am I doing? I'm doing lousy. You know, go, I can't talk, bye. And then she kept calling me like once or twice a week, you know, come and join the happy family, the grateful worldwide fellowship of the Al-Anon family group. And I'm like, yeah, get out of here. I don't have time for Al-Anons. And besides, they dress nice. Their hair is nice. They just, ugh, no. And so us angry people got to look and we got to keep it. And so one day he was doing some kind of rehab thing and they had him write letters. So he wrote me a 17-page letter. And so poor Susie Q calls me one day and she's like, morning, Ellen. How are you today? Lousy as usual, Susie. And I said, but I got a letter from Pat. And she goes, oh, how nice. I said, yeah, let me read it to you. And so I'm on there and I'm like, dear Ellen, you always, you never, you didn't, you wouldn't, you shouldn't, you couldn't. And then I take a breath and she goes, oh, that sounds awful. And I'm like, hold on, page two. And then, and then there was, and so then I have to say to her, and it wasn't like that, it was like this, and I said this, I didn't say that, and he's insane, and she's like, oh, yeah, yeah. And she would take a breath to ask me something, and I'm like, hold on, page three. And I'm like, I went through 17 pages with this woman. I hope she made good money. But anyway, because she deserved it all. So at the end of the 17 pages, she says, wow, that really sounds bad. And I was like, well, good for you. She finally said something smart. And she says, tell me what's been going on. But you know how it is, guys. We don't tell all of it. I just told a little bit of what's going on. And she seemed unimpressed by me. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to tell a little more. You know, he did this and I did that and the house is blue and the kids are. And she was like, wow. And I was like, what? Yeah. All right, here it is. And I just went, and then, and I just like told her I just puked all over this poor Susie Q. And she said to me, she let me go too. She just let me talk, the poor thing. And when I got done, she says, you know, you don't have to do this alone. You don't have to do it by yourself. And there's lots of people just like you. And I'm like me? No way. Nobody lives this life. And she's like, yeah, they are. And I ended up getting with a rehab place out in California to learn about the disease of alcoholism. And I started Al-Anon. And then Pat, I guess, his cathartic end after that letter was over. So he started on a, you know, better part of the program. And I ended up seeing him, and he looked different. He had this bloated kind of, look about him, and just the way he carried himself, he was angry too. And we decided that we were going to try this again. We were going to get back together again. And he stayed out in California a little bit longer, and he came back to Chicago, and I was in Al-Anon, and he was in AA, and that was the beginning of a change of our life. It just is incredible, the things that we've done since we've gotten into these programs. You know, we used to be in a couples group, and with these people, we've had birth and death and divorce and disease and everything in between, and these are our buds today. They know all about us. We know all about them. Pat's got a, you know, group of guys that he surrounds himself. I have a bunch of girls that I hang with, and we're doing this a day at a time. And I think to myself, I didn't want to clap. I was drinking. oh, I get it. I'll pause at the right time next time. All right. So anyway, this is what we surround ourselves with. We do convention work like this too. I love coming to these and watching the committees and putting them on, and it's just like the lifeblood of this program. We all hang together. Getting to meet people like Harlan, who, you know, boosted me up. We aren't even, you know, as good of friends as I am with people there, but in this program, we learn how to do things together and take care of each other. That's just what we do. But you know, you can work in this program as hard as you can, and we're you know, we still have a few problems here and there about different things. And I just do have a couple little stories. I got to decide which ones to tell. Okay. Anyway, all right. So here we are in the program for a few years. We're married 25 years, and when we got married, oh, by the way, when we got married, Pat said to me after, "Do you want to live together? Okay, you want to get married?" He said, do you want a diamond? And I was, I'm 20 years old. I'm like, I don't care. And he goes, well, he was married before. He goes, well, I do have the one I gave Chris. And I'm like, yeah, I don't want that one. And so a diamond was off the table. So I never had a diamond. So 25 years, my Al-Anon ickness came. And I said, I want a diamond. And I want a big one. And let's go. And so anyway, I got not this one. The one I have now is Pat's grandmother's, but I got a diamond ring, and I loved this thing. I just loved this thing. I would go in the bathroom every day, and I had its own toothbrush, and I would scrub it inside and out. And this thing, if I waited 25 years, this is going to shine. So one day I'm in the bathroom, and I'm washing this, and I'm scrubbing it, and it fell. I dropped it, and it bounced around the sink for a while, and then I couldn't hear it, and I couldn't see it, and there's no stopper in the sink. Another thing on the list after he got sober that he didn't fix, but whatever. Anyway, so the ring goes down the sink, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm in so much trouble. So I go outside, and I get like one of those long barbecue forks, and I'm digging in the thing, trying to get it out, and I couldn't get it, so I opened up a hanger, and I'm trying to dig with the hanger, and so I go down, and I get a pair of Kleins, like a big wrench, and I'm down there, and this house is 20 some years old. I can't get this thing to move. And so I had to do the one thing I didn't want to, which was I had to call Pat 911. So he's now not a lineman anymore. He's a businessman. He had a meeting that day. He's all dressed to the nine for his meeting, and I called him up, and I'm like, Pat, and he's like, what? Because he's always crabby. He's just always crabby. What? Why what? I said, I draw my ring down the sink, and he goes, you what? And I said, I can't get it out. And he goes, I'm coming home. So he comes home, and he's with the barbecue fork now, the hanger now. So then he's got the Kleins, and he couldn't get it open. So he went downstairs, and he got a saw. So now he's out of his dress clothes. He's got nothing on but his little undies and his black socks, and he's under the sink, and he's sawn, and he says, you ready? I can't believe you did this to me. How many times I told you not to clean that ring over the sink? I would do it for you, but no, you've got to clean it yourself. And now I'm under the sink, and I was like, oh my God. So he saws through the sink, he moves the pipe. And then he says to me, I didn't hear it move when I moved the pipe. Are you sure you saw it go down the sink? And I'm like, holy crap, mother of God. So I'm on the top of the sink, and I'm moving everything up there. I'm looking for the ring, because if I find it, you know damn well I'm dropping it down the hole. I'm not going through all that just so it's on the sink to begin with. Anyway, he finally takes the pipe apart, and the ring was in there, and he cleaned it for me, because I don't know how to do these things. And, lecture. And so now when I wash my ring, I close my bedroom door, put the dogs outside. I got a new sink out of it, so, I mean, something was good. You know, I pull the drain. I have towels everywhere. And it's not because I love the ring. I don't want to go through that again. But that's the way our brain is. You know, we could go backwards. As long as we've been in the program, step in the wrong direction, you're just like, phew, I'm back there, like, oh, where's that ring? But here's my big one about, this is almost embarrassing, but it's a funny story, so I'll tell it. So anyway, me and Pat were like the scourge of the family. I have three sisters. They're all perfect, like yours, perfect. Perfect sisters. My one sister, yeah, her and her husband both have master's degrees. They have three kids that have master's degrees, three good-looking kids, very athletically gifted, never been arrested. Like, how do you have a kid that's never been arrested? I mean, come on. What the hell? But, to some of you guys? Anyway, So we're going back to the wedding, and we're living in California now. We're going back to Chicago for the wedding, and my sister used to have a party every year, and her friends, they're perfect too. Everything is about, there are people like that, but my sister had this one friend, and he would always just like scrutinize, and oh, I heard Pat did whatever, and I was like, eat shit and die, I hate you, and I just hated this guy, but now we're program people, right? We're living this program, and we are just lifted, and we're amazing. So, but I wanted to make sure we were. So I said to my kids, okay, what are you wearing? Bring it out. Let me see. All right. Yeah. Don't know. That dress is a little too. Let me see what else you got. Oh, yeah, that one. Okay. These shoes. Take them. And the boys, you're wearing a suit. You're wearing a tie. Bring them out. Let's see them. And then I said to my one son, because one time we were going home to visit my mom in Chicago, and me and the other two kids were sitting waiting by the plane boarding thing, and he wasn't coming. Finally, right before they boarded, he showed up, and I said, where you been? And he goes, oh, the McDonald's got my stomach. I was in the bathroom. I found out later he was smoking pot somewhere in the airport, and they were going to arrest him. They had him in cuffs and going to drag him off, and something bigger came, and they let him go. And I said, it's your lucky day, buddy. I didn't find this out till he was grown up. But anyway, I said to him, don't know where you are in the pot partying these days, but you put a pot in your, and this was after 9/11, you put a pot in your suitcase, I will kick your ass. And my son-in-law, too, and I told my daughter, tell him no pot, and we're doing this, and don't do that. And my husband is a union official, and my brother-in-law from back east, the one in Wisconsin, not the perfect one. This guy's not perfect. He works at Walmart. And Walmart and unions don't get along very well. So Pat's always like laying out his union crap to the Walmart guy. And I'm like telling him, no Walmart shit at the wedding. And we're going to be good. And it's going to be awesome. My other son even married a girl that had tattoos on her neck. And she wore a turtleneck. I mean, it was awesome. So we go to the wedding, go to the church, they kneeled at the right time, they did it all. We go to the reception, and they were partying, having fun. And my youngest son was 20. He was just a couple months short of his 21st birthday, and all the kids were drinking. So we said, go ahead, you know, because we already knew the other two drank in high school. This kid didn't. He just wasn't into it. So he did it all in one night, but he had so much fun, you know. He's out on the dance floor with drinks, and he's like, yeah, this wedding is so much fun. And by the end of the night, I was just so happy. Everybody behaved so well. It was awesome, and it was in a hotel, so they had moved to the bar in the hotel, and I just was like, this program is amazing. We have just raised these awesome kids, and it went really well. And then my sister's friend that I can't stand comes up. He goes, hey, what are you going to do about your boys? And I said, what boys? There's nothing wrong with my boys. He goes, really? If I was you, I'd go down that hallway there and check out your boys. And one of them is the big one, meaning the dad. And I go down the hall, and here he is trying to get my youngest son to go to bed because he, in his 49% Al-Anon, has decided that this kid has had too much to drink. Everybody's in the bar just, you know, having a good time, but he decides he's got to go to bed. And he's like, you're going to bed. And Casey's like, no, I'm not. And I don't know how it all started, but by the time I got there, the two of them were on the ground, rolling down the hall. Everybody's screaming, the whole thing. And here's my Al-Anonic going, what is going on here? And, then my son got so mad, he left the building, and it was snowing outside. It was freezing in Chicago. Not like today, real cold. And nobody knows where he went. And next thing you know, we're in the hallway, and you hear this. From a couple hallways is SWAT gear, cops in SWAT gear, coming down the hall. And they're like, where's the boy? We don't know where the boy is. And I found out a couple years later, the police department was right across the street from the hotel. That's why they were there. But anyway, Pat had come down. We got Casey finally, and he went to bed, and everything got quiet. And we were staying at another hotel, and I was beyond livid. Like, how could you do this to me? So me and Pat are in the car driving back to the hotel, and I'm like, wow, how could you do this to me? Everything was perfect. Everybody looked good. They all acted good. Everybody, but no, you got to get in his face and roll down the hole. Oh, my God. I was like, Al-Anon was not even a word on the face of the earth. And then later on, I called a friend of mine, you know, back in California, and I was telling her this thing, and she laughed through the whole thing, and she goes, this has nothing to do with any of them. Like, look at yourself here. You know, I have to have this perfect family, and I have to show them off, and, you know, my program's got to be on par, and all this crap, and I was like 20 years in the program. Oops. So we can slip at any time. But yeah, I sit back and I look at it. And the next day we had gone, they had a brunch, and we went to that. And the Walmart brother-in-law says, hey, I heard there was a little something went on last night. And I still wasn't totally well. And I'm like, yeah, what is it? Go ask somebody else. Don't ask me. And he was like, okay. You know, he stayed away from me. I have to, last thing I want to tell you about is my mom and what I've learned in the program with her. She was my favorite person in the whole wide world. My dad died when we were kids, so it was, and my two older sisters were away at college, so after he was gone, it was me and my mom and my little sister, and she just was our everything. Our grandparents were actually gone, or I think I was two when the last grandparent died, so I never had those, and my dad died at 15, and so he was 50. I thought he died of old age. Another one of those. And Alan and I thought they were old. And I thought they should have been dead by then, but I'm well past that. Anyway, she was my everything. As a matter of fact, when I got married, I had a godfather that I didn't really know that well. And she walked me down the aisle and gave me away when we got married. That's how much she meant to me. And even after, when I moved to California, as a matter of fact, Pat's dad and his wife drove us to the airport to drop us off, and I cried all the way there, and it was a long ride. I just couldn't imagine leaving my mom. She was my everything. You know, I talked to her pretty much every day and would see her every week, and she just was everything, and she was just the sweetest, kindest, most giving person I ever met. But I would talk to her every Saturday, and it could only be on Saturday. Couldn't call her during the week because it was cheaper to talk on the phone on Saturday. Yeah, and that had ended probably 10 years before we did this, but she still believed. She was a believer, so I'd have to wait till Saturday, and she would always call me at the crack of dawn on Saturday. Hi, Al. What's new? You know, and we would talk, and, you know, I'd tell her about the kids. She'd tell me what's new there, and it was just, you know, amazing. So one Saturday, she called, and she said, hi, Al. Oh, no, she'd say, morning, sunshine. I forgot that part. Morning, sunshine, she would always say to me, what's new, Al? And I'd say, and she goes, well, I got something to talk to you about. I've been to the doctor, and I've been diagnosed with lung cancer, and they're giving me 6 months to a year to live. And, you know, I just want to let you guys know. And I got off their phone call really quick, and I was sobbing, like, how can you take her? Like, you've taken everybody else. You can't have my mom. You can't have my mom. And so farther on into her illness, there was only one sister that lives there. One's in Wisconsin, two of us in California. So the one in Chicago would go and help my mom with grocery shopping. She was having a hard time. Her kids were in high school. She worked full time. They had a lot of sports. So I decided that we take care of each other. This is what I learned. Well, actually, I learned from her and cemented it from you guys, and I took 9 weeks off work, and I went to stay with my mom. Was it nine? Shut, it wasn't 12. Anyway, I took a bunch of weeks off. My daughter said it was a year because she was stuck at home with all the boys, and she goes, don't ever do that to me again. But anyway, I took a bunch of weeks off work. I think it was nine. And I was going to stay with her, and you know, I did her shopping, and I did her cooking, which I, to this day, still apologize for, because my cooking sucks, but I fed her. And we would sit on the couch, and she would tell me stories about my dad. You know, I didn't really know my dad, because I was a kid when he died. And I was 15, but they kept us young. And I didn't really know him as a person, and she was telling me about how, you know, he really tried to go after her, and she wasn't interested, and she was 30 when, my parents were older than everybody else, she was 30 when they got married. And so she would tell me those stories, and sometimes we didn't talk at all. We would just sit and, you know, watch TV or hang or whatever. But anyway, my nice, sweet, kind, loving mom is like the rest of us and has a problem, a little, just a little, tiny little. My mom grew up in the South Side of Chicago, and she was prejudiced. prejudiced to the bone. And so as she started getting sicker, the insurance sent over someone to give her baths and care for her, like a nurse's aide type person. And who do they send but the darkest skinned black girl they could find? And Dolores would come in the door and she'd be so happy and she'd be like, "Morning, Kay." And my mom's like, "Yeah, you know, whatever." And my mom would sit there and she would let her take the bath. And when they got down to, you know, like the area, my mom would go, "Give me the rag. Like, you're not in there." And she would, you know, wash herself off. And they were in the kitchen and I would be in the living room and I'm talking to Dolores. Well, after some time went by, you know, you're not having a conversation my mom's not going to get in, even if she doesn't want to be in it. Think about it. So anyway, my mom starts talking to Dolores too. And as more time went by, they would do the bath. And then my mom and Dolores would move into the living room and they would carry on conversations. And my mom used to dance at the Trianon, and so did Dolores, like, years later. And they knew the same neighborhood, and one day my mom says to me, "Elle, I was talking to Dolores today, and she has a son that's an attorney." I said, "Are you kidding me, Mom? I didn't know they had attorneys." I said, "Someday they might even have a president." She didn't live that long. But anyway, so 9 weeks go by, and her plan is to go move in with my sister that lives in Chicago. And till the end, you know, because it was obvious it was coming close. My mom couldn't really do much of anything. And, I mean, I washed her hair one day, and it just knocked her out for a day. It was just, it was horrible. But it was, in my heart, the coolest, best gift I was ever given in my life, ever, ever, ever. If you ever get a chance to be with somebody on their way out, it's the only way to go. It's just priceless. And anyway, so the day comes, her last day at her house, and she's going to move to my sister's, and Dolores comes for her last bath, and they're in the kitchen, and, you know, move to the living room, and they're visiting and stuff like that. And then Dolores is leaving, and my mom's got tears in her eyes. And I looked at her and I saw that God did for her what she couldn't do for herself. My mom had this piece of hate in her heart that was clearly going to get in her way. And God said, "Here, Kay, I'll give you the opportunity to take care of it. Take it or leave it. It's up to you." And my mom gave Dolores a hug, and they were both crying because they were never going to see each other again. And I just saw how God works right in front of me, and I it's something I will never, 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 ever forget. I've had so many amazing things happen in my life since we've been in the program. It's kind of funny. I'll have conversations with friends of mine, and they'll be upset about whatever, and I'll say, blah, blah, like something I learned here. Like, I'll throw some slogan at them or something, or, you know, like, "Why are you upset? It could be this," or something. And they're like, "God, you're so smart." And, you know, in the beginning, I'm like, yeah. But then I say, actually, you too could go to a bar, pick up a drunk that will ruin your life, and get sober, and then they end up in Ellen, and you could be as smart as me. And they go, what? And I'm like, yeah, skip it. You can't get it. But I just want to tell all you guys, even though I call myself an Al-Anonic, I really am a grateful member of the Worldwide Fellowship of the Al-Anon Family Groups, and I am so, so happy I'm here today, and thank you so much.